Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
The Athletic.
Hello and welcome back to Pod on the Tyne, your go-to Newcastle United podcast, brought to you by The Athletic. My name's Taylor Payne, and coming up this week, we're back from our holidays. Well, not George, but he's earned his rest. And as England's glorious Euros campaign fades into the distance, another chapter of the Newcastle United takeover saga brings us back to reality with a bump. The club's newest number 9 gets a grilling from the most illustrious inhabitant of that shirt. And it's 25 years since Big Al took on the mantle. Sir John Hall speaks to Chris and remembers how he helped pull off the biggest transfer in the club's history. So it's great to be returning to the airwaves, even if we're headed straight back into the absolute bin fire that is Mike Ashley's Newcastle United. And I'm joined, as ever, by Mr. Chris Wolf. How are you doing, Chris? Are you okay?
Well, I was okay until you brought me in at that stage. Bin fire at Mike Ashley's Newcastle United, and then you bring Chris in, yeah.
Here is the absolute bin fire that is Chris Wolf.
That's what it felt like. But no, I am very good, thank you. I am... Delighted to be back. I know I've had loads of people asking on social media over the last few weeks, where are you? Can we come back and chat to everyone? And we have missed you all. I'm not going to lie, we haven't particularly missed Newcastle United and covering this lot, but we have missed each other and all of you out there. So delighted to be back with you.
I've certainly missed you, Chris. I've missed your dulcet tones. It's been a long time, hasn't it? It's like pulling on a comfortable old coat, isn't it?
Yeah. It is. And then it's as if we are doing a podcast the day after the last time we did a podcast as well, in terms of what's happened at Newcastle United. We could have just done it then and just got it ready for now.
Literally nothing has happened. Oh, well, I'm sure we'll make our way through. Have you had a good summer anyway? Did you enjoy the Euros and everything? I know you're not a massive one for international football, but even you must have got swept along with that slightly, did you?
I did enjoy the Euros, yeah, I enjoy it. I'm not massive in terms of really liking England. I'm not that particularly bothered about that, which I realise would be a controversial view out there. But I enjoyed the whole tournament, and I thought England did very well to get to the final. Yeah, it was excellent. And I mean, particularly this Spain-Italy semi-final was just a fantastic game of football. So it was absolutely wonderful to see.
A festival of football, absolutely. Well, we've got
lots. And obviously, England got the final because of our very own Graham Jones. So,
of course they did, and that is the only reason. Literally the only reason that England got the final. So, we've got lots to get through anyway, Chris. That Callum Wilson interview that I mentioned in the intro, it was a fantastic read, and it was brilliantly put together by Alan Shearer and George as well, assisting him ably. And we've got a couple of tasters coming up from that. But you'll need to subscribe to The Athletic to enjoy that article in its full glory. So before we get started, here's the latest deal. If you subscribe to The Athletic before the start of the new Premier League season, which I'm reliably informed is the 15th of August, you'll get a 33% discount, so that's a third off the regular price. You'll get all the same great analysis and in-depth features from the very best football writers around, as well as ad-free versions of all of these podcasts, including this brilliant one that you're listening to right now. So get yourself over to theathletic.com/NewcastlePod before the 15th of August for a third off the price of a subscription. That's theathletic.com/NewcastlePod. So hurry yourself along. Right then, Chris. What shall we dive into first? I mean, the takeover is something that's still on everybody's lips, isn't it? It's still the fly in the ointment, the annoying younger brother. We need to cover this, don't we? We need to talk about it as much as we don't want to. So can you give me a rough idea of where we are at the minute and what exactly is going on for those of us who are uninitiated?
Right, so yes, I mean, in one sense, when I said that nothing has happened, it's nothing has happened in terms of nothing really has moved on, but things have happened in the sense that there have been some developments, so there have been the Cat case, which is Mike Ashley and St. James's Holding, that is a personal legal case which he has lodged, that is now scheduled, the first part of it is now scheduled to be heard, I think it's September the 27th. That is just a preliminary hearing, though, essentially, with the Premier League trying to get that thrown out, so we will not get any resolution necessarily to that, other than if the Cat case isn't going to go forward on that front. So that is it very much being kicked in the long grass. But as so too is arbitration. I mean, there was a lot of stuff from Amanda Staveley and Newcastle United about a month and a half ago, where they were pushing for transparency and they were encouraging fans. And obviously some fans went down to London and protested outside the Houses of Parliament, along from Downing Street and also outside the Premier League offices, for transparency with the takeover, for information as to exactly what is happening, and basically for arbitration to be held in public. Newcastle United called for that. Amanda Staveley called for that. And instead, not only did that not become public, instead what we had was a short statement released, which was co-signed by both the Premier League and Newcastle United on the first day of arbitration, basically saying that both sides have agreed for arbitration to be pushed forward to, quote-unquote, early 2022 due to issues providing evidence. We don't know what exactly that means, what in terms of whether it's both sides or not. I mean, what I understand is that it is, and that there's been issues on both sides in terms of providing that, but basically it's still in complete limbo. And so Mike Ashley remains owner. He was very much hopeful. I mean, he was hopeful he was going to go last summer, but this summer he wasn't going to be there. And instead, we're just at this situation whereby Mike Ashley remains owner. Newcastle United haven't signed anyone yet this window. Steve Bruce is still manager, and still this long-term uncertainty. The takeover hasn't actually completely gone away, but nor is it any closer to actually being resolved.
I feel like we've had this conversation for the last 2 years constantly, Chris. It's just so frustrating, isn't it? And it just rumbles on and on and on. And I know for a fact fans are absolutely desperate for some kind of resolution to this. But the danger is here that while we're in this sort of stasis, that we're just kind of stuck in suspended animation waiting for things to happen, the club is in real danger of sliding, isn't it? You know, because Mike Ashley's kind of, you know, he's took his hand off the tiller. We're just kind of drifting along. We're not really doing anything. The club is just kind of bobbing along, isn't it? And there's a real danger here that if we don't think about what we're doing, and we don't take this year in the Premier League seriously, that we could slide into a dangerous position.
Very much so. This is the last part of the 2019-20 season, where you felt like that this sort of inertia, this limbo that Newcastle are in, couldn't really go on, and yet it did into a full season. And there was sort of like a mindset last summer where, right, well, this season, certainly at least for a fair portion of it, Mike Ashley's going to remain owner. Let's get through this. And there was actually some transfer business last year, belatedly, in that at the time seemed quite positive transfer business in a relative sense. Obviously, Callum Wilson, Jamal Lewis, Ryan Fraser, they brought in a few players, and it looked like Jeff Hendrick as well, obviously the key one. And it looked like they were going to have an okay season, and it didn't work out that way for various reasons, for which we've gone into a million times on this podcast. But then the thought that it was going to go into another season of there not being a resolution either way, in terms of the fact that arbitration, we'd known since I think it was March when April when the Cat case came out, that the arbitration was going to be in July, but because it was confidential, we didn't have any information beyond that. But it was all built up as if there could be a resolution either way, in terms of whether the owners and directors test could eventually progress, and or whether the Premier League had applied it correctly and therefore the takeover was never going to happen. And instead, what we have is that this has been postponed till early 2022. Cat case doesn't look like being resolved anytime soon either. And it's just exasperating for everyone involved. And the fact that this has been allowed to drag on in this way. I just don't think the problem I've got in terms of everything that's going on, and I know Newcastle fans have raised this, is in terms of this idea that the Premier League owners and directors test is there to protect individual Premier League clubs and therefore to prevent poor owners from coming in. I sort of understand that, but equally you've now left Newcastle in a position where, which is partly Mike Ashley's own fault because he keeps pushing up from this, and if it's not going to happen, then maybe he himself should walk away, and that may be the Premier League's argument on this. But instead, you have an owner who basically is signed off more than a year ago, doesn't want to be there anymore.
Yeah, he's checked out, isn't he?
Yeah, and the club is just languishing in this position whereby there aren't signings arriving. They are renewing contracts they don't really want to renew just so they don't have to sign anyone. And there is frustration internally at Newcastle. Some of the players are growing frustrated, and understandably so. How could they not? And as I just think that Mike Ashley's got away with a heck of a lot over the last few months or year, even if you want to say that, in terms of just because he has been so keen for this takeover to happen and he has pushed forward. But equally, he's allowed things to continue happening at the club that he remains custodian for. And that is just simply unacceptable. But this is a man who, throughout his more than 14 years as owner, hasn't really cared a lot about what Newcastle fans think, and so that I think that's going to fall on deaf ears, unfortunately.
Yeah, there is that just that wall of belligerence, isn't there, when it comes to Mike Ashley, who he'll just do whatever is more suitable for Mike Ashley than anything else, won't he? He's not there as some kind of caring owner. He will literally just do what is right for him, and to hell with the consequences, kind of thing. It's interesting though, isn't it? And like you say there, the owners and directors test, like you rightly say, the idea of it is to protect fans from unscrupulous owners and stuff like that. But the longer this goes on, it feels more like it's there to protect the Premier League. And I don't know if you know what I mean by that, but it just feels like it's kind of a barrier for them that they can put this, they can stick this fence up and say, well, actually, you don't meet our standards, so I'm afraid you're not welcome to the party, you know? That's just kind of how I feel about it. It's strange though, Chris. But what's the kind of next steps then? Is there any prospect of any kind of conclusion this season, or do you think it's likely to rumble on and on?
I'd be lying if I said I could answer that question but I would be, and I don't want to try and present sort of false information about. We've had so many supposed deadlines throughout which have come and gone and haven't turned out to be correct, and also so many different. I don't pretend to be the font of all knowledge of everything to do with arbitrations and legal issues like CAT. Yeah. And I've tried, we at The Athletic have gone to people and tried to speak to people in more than Northern Us, but even they, to a certain degree, certainly to do with arbitration, are taking a bit of a leap because it's confidential and we don't know exactly what is happening and what is going on there. There could be a resolution, but equally there might not be. I just don't know. I think at the moment that the mindset certainly of Mike Ashley needs to be, I am going to be here for this season and I need to make sure that Newcastle United are in a stronger position than they are now. That is how I believe he should be looking at it, but that's easy for me to say because Mike Ashley's just not going to listen to that. So,
well, as we know, Chris, what he should do and what he actually ends up doing is two completely different things, aren't they? But we've had that for years. But yeah, okay. Well, there we go. The takeover rumbles on, and you know, I'm starting to get a bit bored of the whole thing, to be honest. But hopefully, we'll find some kind of resolution in the not too distant future. And it's a complicated matter, isn't it? And I understand that there's lots of caveats and lots of details and stuff to go into, and I'm by no means any kind of expert when it comes to legal stuff. So I think we'll leave that to the experts. Definitely. Right. Let's move on.
Athletic podcast listeners, and especially fans of the Totally Football Show, here's some exciting news, if you're that way inclined. The Totally Football Yearbook is the definitive chronicle of the not particularly easy to say 2020-2021 season, and it'll look absolutely ravishing on your bookshelf. It'll have features, season reviews, stats, quizzes, and plenty more, plus a foreword from Jamie Carragher, and lots of the good stuff from your favourite Athletic writers, including Nick Miller, Rafa Honigstein, and James Horncastle, and people like Daniel Story, Duncan Alexander, and Julian Laurent from Team Totally. The Totally Football Yearbook is out on August the 5th, and you can pre-order your copy wherever you get your books today.
This episode is brought to you by Michelob Ultra, the official beer sponsor of the NBA. Want to get closer to the game than ever before? Michelob Ultra Courtside is giving fans the chance to win exclusive NBA prizes and experiences like official gear, courtside seats to an NBA game, and more. head over to MichelobUltra.com/courtside to learn more.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
So, I don't know if you heard it this week, but, or if you saw on the Twitter or on the interweb, The Athletic's big interview this week, it was fantastic, came to you courtesy of Alan Shearer, assisted ably by our very own George Colgan, and is with the current Newcastle number 9, a man carrying plenty of responsibility on his shoulders as he goes into the new season, Mr. Callum Wilson. Did you have a listen to it, Chris? Did you have a read of the interview?
Oh, yes, certainly did. I thought it was excellent.
Fabulous, wasn't it?
Seeing the way that sort of Shearer's mind works and how Callum Wilson's mind works, and the sort of similarities between them, but just that thirst for goals, just that everything is just obsessed with how, and it like to have that sort of instinct, which is what Newcastle were lacking until Callum Wilson, for so many years until Callum Wilson arrived last summer. Yeah, it was wonderful, and Wilson setting himself targets and things like that. Yeah, it was absolutely excellent to read.
Definitely. We've got a few clips for you now if you want to have a little listen to those. Alan asked Callum exactly how it feels to be wearing that number 9 after a year in the unlucky number 13.
Yeah, I think obviously, you know, it's such an iconic shirt for Newcastle United. You know, yourself, you've wore it in the past and done great things on that shirt. And for me, it was a selling point coming to the club, having the opportunity to play in front of such a great fan base, and being a striker, you want to wear the number 9 shirt, as you know. And for me, coming up first season, walked in the door and didn't want to kind of, you know, ruffle any feathers straight away. So you have to bide your time, get your feet under the table a little bit. And and yeah, you know, make friends around the dressing room rather than enemies straight away. So I thought for me, you know, just being the mature thing to do was just to settle for 13th first season. And then me and Joe had the conversation recently when the 7 come up available, and that's an iconic shirt as well. And I says, you know, I play predominantly down the middle as a striker, and he plays a little bit more out wide, so it made sense really. He's a nice enough guy, he's a top lad, he was understanding about it. And yeah,
how was
it?
How did the conversation go? Was it and how soon did you ask him? Did you ask him at the beginning of last season when you got here, and was it no? And how did it go this summer when the 7 became available, and it was nice to drop it in there? Was he all right about it, or was he a bit reluctant?
it's difficult to say. I think at first, you know, as any striker would be, you've got someone who you've just signed and bringing into the club. First things first, you know, that there's competition there and they're going to try and take your position. And then secondly, you don't want them definitely taking your squad number. So, you know, it was one of those things where we just kind of didn't bring the discussion to Joey last season. And this year we was on pre-season tour in York, and the first pre-season game was coming up, and there was a few questions asked, are you taking the 9 this season? And I kind of hadn't thought about it, you know, about having the conversation with him. And just so happened, we was walking down the corridor, walking past one another. We was both on our own. And I just pulled him and just says, you know, would you like to take 7? I'd prefer to have 9 if you're okay with that. And he just basically said, yeah, thank you for asking. And, you know, was a gentleman about it. And like I say, he's such a nice guy that I didn't expect anything else, really, to be honest. It was, you're trying not to make it a one-sided conversation. Like there's no way
you should have asked him earlier. You should have asked him last season then.
Well, yeah, it's true. I just thought we'll get this first season out of the way, let him have some time off, and then we'll come back and have a proper discussion then about it.
So you know the significance of that shirt. I mean, I can imagine that there have been one or two that have come into Newcastle and sort of shied away from it because of the situation. It was very similar with me and Les Ferdinand when he was here. I asked the question to the manager before I signed, and Les kindly gave it to me. But I would imagine that one or two have ran away from wearing the number 9 shirt because of the pressure, but that never entered your mind. You understand what it is and know the significance of it.
Yeah, for me, I'm quite a self-confident player anyway. I believe in myself. Always believe, whether it's a great shirt to have on the back and you're playing for the badge on the front, but ultimately you've got a job to do, as a man on the pitch at that moment in time. And I think, I kind of don't let it absorb my brain and kind of, weigh me down. You're just flourishing it and trying to excel. And I'm just looking forward to obviously wearing it in the stadium with all the fans there and stuff like that. It's going to be such a proud moment for myself, for my family. And, all you want to do is do it justice for people like yourself.
Really interesting to hear that conversation went on with him and Joe Linton in the background, and that it wasn't a sort of club decision or anything like that. It was just worked out between the two of them. I like hearing little bits like that. It's nice. Gives you a little peek behind the curtain. One major source of frustration for Alan Shearer has been watching the mega-talented Alan Saint-Maximin underperforming when it comes to delivery to the strikers. And he asked Callum Wilson if he had it out with him, as Alan definitely would have done.
No, do you know what it is? Obviously, in training, I say to him, listen, you'd be so much better if you do your skills and then do the simple thing. I said, and sometimes you don't need to do skills because you're so quick and powerful. Go and pass it simple, In training, he'll take on a player, take him on again. And I'm like, look, you can do that, but can you do the other side? And that's where it's going to take you from Newcastle to the France World Cup, what he wants to go to and stuff like that. And this year, he's definitely come back with his mindset's concentrated, he seems like he's got a focus, he's got a drive this year. And he said to me, I want to go to the World Cup with France. So for me, I said, well, I'll get you the assists and be in positions to do that for you and also do the same for me. And, we had a good little relationship the other night and he dragged so many people away. Then he turned with the ball and then it's like, right, can you find me now? And that's something, the more we play together, the more he's going to do that.
Nobody's scored 20 goals for Newcastle in a Premier League season since Alan Shearer did it in 2003 and 2004. But Callum Wilson's in an optimistic mood this year. Have a listen to this.
12 is not a number I want to be associated with as a striker. You want to be up near 20, 15, and at least obviously frustrated to have setbacks with the injuries that hampered me. I felt like I was on my way to a 20-goal season. But I kind of took what I did, with the chances that I had within games. I felt I was as clinical as I could be. There's always bits of your finishing that you can brush up on as well. More chances, stand straight to mind is Brighton third game of the season, I think it was. I had a header, should have scored that. And, I was still kicking myself when I was injured, thinking that would have been an extra goal, it's frustrating. But I think I'm working hard now pre-season. I'm getting a good, bit of running and physicality behind me, getting robust, and I just want to get to 20 goals this season. I'm not kind of...
Is that a target for you? Because I always used to say to myself, whenever a season started, I've got to get to 20 goals. I've got to try and get there as quickly as possible. It might be a long run, but 20 goals, I think, is more than acceptable in this season. Is that a target for you? Because you've mentioned it yourself there, try to get to 20. Is that a target for you and your brain?
Yeah, 100%. I think, I've played in League One. I've played in the Championship. I played in the Premier League and this is the only league that I haven't hit 20 goals in yet. So it's grinding me away inside, So it's something that, deep down I want to achieve just for myself and personally. And I think it's no secret. I want to hit 20 goals this season. I'm going to do everything in my power to hit that, as well as helping the team and providing assists for others. But ultimately I'm judged on scoring goals and that's all I'm thinking about. It's what I want to do. And I've got one eye, on a long-term goal of trying to make the World Cup as well. So that's something that's given me a little bit of motivation and internal desire as well.
Fantastic stuff, Chris. Absolutely love listening to that.
Oh, absolutely wonderful. I mean, just on the Saint-Maximin sort of point, what was interesting, this isn't about Saint-Maximin, but it's about Wilson and sort of that willingness to actually call out other players. It was the Rotherham pre-season friendly. And Newcastle had been poor, and there'd been some sort of poor. They'd been poor in the build-up play, and there was one run that Wilson made in the second half where he tried to run through, and he was cleaning. And Murphy had done really well from right wing back, nicked the ball, was trying to push on, and then was gonna play through Wilson, and massively overhit the pass, and Wilson just turned around and like screamed at him and told him no in certain terms. That just was not acceptable. And it's just that, and it's just having that, it's that desire to, he wants to score goals. He wants every opportunity to score goals, and he wants people to put him in that position. And what he's saying to Sam Maximan is there, if he says, if you actually put it in the box, I will get you more assists because I will score goals, and I will benefit from that myself, getting the goals. And it is that mindset, and that's where he does sort of fit with the mindset of some of the great strikers over the years, is just that desire to score more goals and to get more goals. And that's the difference to him and Joe Linton. I've felt for Joe Linton to a certain extent over the last couple of years, because he's not a number nine, and I don't think he should ever have been given that number. I don't think it was fair from two. And I think that just that mindset with Wilson just shows that he is the perfect fit for that shirt.
Absolutely. It was great to hear somebody with that kind of hunger as well, though, isn't it? That's exactly what you want to hear as a fan. You want someone saying, you know, this is what I want. I want 20 goals, and if I don't get them, I'm not going to be happy. I love to hear that. And also to hear the similarities between the way he was speaking and the way you hear Alan Shearer talk about scoring goals and that sort of mindset that those elite strikers have. It's great to hear that coming from your current number nine as well. You know, it's exactly what we need going into the new season.
Oh, it is, and that's... He's talking about 20 goals. I mean, 20 goals for Newcastle, as you said, it's nobody's done it since Shearer himself. And
it's a lot, isn't it?
But even beyond...
The deluded fool.
Even if you go beyond sort of the really top sides, very few forwards in the Premier League score 20 goals, but he has that desire to do it. I mean, if he'd played the full season last season, he probably would have got something. In terms of the ratio he's on, he would have got about 18.
He would have been close, because, yeah.
Yeah, he missed a third of the season. He got 12 or 13, whatever it was, overall. And it's just, I think that in a team, if you've got Alan Saint-Maximin fit, then Newcastle will create opportunities for Wilson, and Wilson will take enough of them. And that's where I go into the season, despite everything that's gone so far, where I think that Newcastle will be just about okay, and why they should always have been okay last season, is because of those two. But it's about keeping them fit,
this
getting them out
the
on the pitch,
isn't
and
it?
Getting them there together.
It's that front two, three, four, depending on how we're going to play and what formation we're going to use. It's keeping those lads fit. So Almiron, Saint-Maximin, Gillen, and Callum Wilson, it's keeping those guys match fit and keeping them on the pitch, because that's where they're going to do the damage. We need to make sure that's the case this season. And I think without that, I think we're going to struggle, you know, Chris, for goals, because there wasn't many goals coming from other parts of the squad last year. Whereas in the year before that, we didn't have many goals from up front, and we had more goals from midfield and stuff like that. So, fingers crossed, Callum can start smashing them in again. That's what we all want to see. So, I know I've already told you this, but it bears repeating. So, if you want to get access to that whole Callum Wilson interview, yeah, you're going to need a subscription to The Athletic. So, luckily, if you subscribe to The Athletic before the start of the new Premier League season, you'll get a 33% discount. That's a third off the regular price. So, get yourself over to theathletic.com, Newcastle Pod, before the 15th of August for a third off the price of subscription. That's theathletic.com/Newcastle Pod.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
It's only a kick. A jump. A block. It's only a serve. It's only a tackle. A run. It's only for the fans. After all, it's only pressure. You got this. Adidas.
Okay. 25 years ago this week, Chris, we've just spoke about him before, Mr. Alan Shearer signed for Newcastle United. in a shock to the world of football, a world record fee of £15 million. And you've been speaking to one of the architects of that very deal, a man who doesn't do many interviews. So we're very lucky to be able to talk to him, Sir John Hall.
We have signed Alan Shearer. It's a world record fee that we've paid. And we're delighted, obviously. Other than that, we want to save the press conference until we go back home to Newcastle, because the signing is for the people of Newcastle. We feel we should talk about it in front of our fans first, and not when we're away from home. And really, that is the only statement, that is the statement that will be released to the press, so, you know. But it just shows you the ambition of a team like Newcastle United. We are the biggest thinking team in Europe now. We're not the biggest, most successful team yet, but we're the biggest thinking.
Wow! I feel good.
Welcome Alan Shearer to Newcastle United Football Club.
Sugar and spice. So nice, so nice. I got you.
Obviously, thanks very much for the tremendous welcome that you gave us all today. It's a great privilege for me. I think it was more years ago than I care to remember when I actually went to a Blue Star Soccer Day sponsored by the brewery, and Alan was there. I think he was there as a goalkeeper then. Too many years to mention, and a lot of money has fetched him back. But it's your money, it's the money you've spent, and I see it as my job, and it's a privilege to have the job of reinvesting that money. You put it in, and then I put it into the team, so that when you come to watch the product on the park here, it's the very, very best that we feel we can provide, because that's what you deserve. And we have certainly done that with this man on my right. And I don't want to say any more. It's his day, it's your day, and it's lovely to see a Geordie come back home. We've sold him off time and time again up here. We've built stands with the money, people have said, and we've tried to buy other players to replace them very quickly. That's gone at this club now. He's come here because he knows he's got a great chance of winning something, and we've bought him because we know, even with the great players we've got, that this guy on my right is going to improve them. So it's yours, it's your day, and I'm really pleased for you.
I knew that I would not. I feel good. I knew that I would. So good.
I think the number nine at Newcastle is something special, something that I've, as I've said, always wanted to do, and now I've got the chance to do that. It's a dream come true.
So good. So good. But I got you.
I just can't wait to get going now. There's, as I said, there's Les, there's Ginola, there's Beardsley, there's, you can go through the whole side, and if we can gel, which I don't see it being a problem, then hopefully there's one or two goals for us.
So good, so good. I got you.
After all, I'm only a sheet metal worker's son from Newcastle.
Due really to Freddie Fletcher, who was our chief exec at the time. He was very active in the Premier League and was friendly with Jack Walker, who owned Blackburn. And Freddie took a call from Jack Walker one day saying that Man United were after Shearer and had made an approach for him. And I don't think Jack Walker was very keen to do a deal with them. So he always had an understanding with Freddie. They were very close friends. That if Alan Shearer ever became available, he would give us an opportunity. But of course, when Freddie came in, bump, Shearer's available. Well, we just looked at him, you know. World record fee they wanted. He said, we've got a chance to buy him, and we couldn't believe it. So anyway, Jack worked up, give me $15 million, and he's yours. So then, of course, we had to then, bump, bump, where do we get the cash from? So it was a case of our own cash. But the Castle Breweries at the time were a great supporter of the club. And they actually brought sponsorships forward and up front and put them on the table. So we managed to put the 50 million together, and there he was. He was a Newcastle United player. It was a fantastic time. We never even thought for one moment we'd ever get him, but he came to Newcastle, and I remember the day he came. That day there was 12,500 people in the stadium just basically waiting for him to arrive. What a time.
I mean, when it's said to you that it's £15 million if you want to sign him, it's £20 million to Manchester United. I mean, nowadays that doesn't seem like that much money, but in those days that was huge. I mean, what was your initial reaction when those sorts of figures were said?
Well, but we got the cash up, you know. There's a lot of cash at the time. It's world records today well over 100 million, but basically at the time that was a world record. 15 million was the equivalent, basically, I suppose, of 100 million today. That was the sort of sums we were playing around. And it was a big sum for the club because the turnovers were good, but they're not that brilliant, not that high. So it was just hard to find it, but we found it, and he came, and it lifted Newcastle to a new level.
Obviously, this was at the time when the club was through yourself and Kevin Keegan had gone through this transformation. You just missed out on the title, and I've looked back at your quote at the time, and you spoke about the fact that Alan Shearer, a Geordie, had gone elsewhere, and that talent had seeped away, and that you wanted to, there was this vision to try and make it so that players like that wouldn't leave the region. I mean, if you look 25 years on, how important was it to bring home someone like Alan Shearer, who's such an icon for the region?
Oh, he was a hero to most people, and he's an icon. He was a Geordie, and it's I've always had the dream, you know, of trying to get a team of 11 Geordies who would play with their hearts. Good footballers would play with their hearts on their sleeve. And it was never possible. We've lost so many players over the years. And when I got into the club, when I took over the club, I had this plan, in effect, to set up academies all throughout the North East region and across to Carlisle, where we would put a retired player, say, Peter Beardsley in charge, say, Berwick. And up there would basically have an academy. Maybe have five or six around the northeast, and the intention was to be a place where young people could come, young players could come very early, but be part of the club in a sense. And at the same time, our players in charge of these academies would look for the good players and basically gradually bring them through. And I always had the thought that basically once a season would have the academies playing each other. And so we could see the final at St James's Park, and we could see the good players. Well, I wanted to try and keep the good players in the North East in this area and play for Newcastle United. But I couldn't make it happen at the time. But that's always the dream. And it's not new. If you can tap me, because there's always been players like the North East working class areas where football, in a sense, took you from your poverty, but your background in the past. It was a means of getting out. And it was something, in a sense, that we always wanted to do. But there are good players in this region, still are. They're there. You just got to find them. But even if, basically, you didn't play in Newcastle, you had the next generation of supporters at your academies. And you could use it for education. And this is what I intended to do. And use it more than basically just for playing football, but to get to the young people in an area and maybe help you get them off drugs. It was a complete social thing that I wanted to do.
And I mean, when Shearer, when you're looking at Shearer at that point, I mean, was it something that Kevin pushed as well? Because obviously you already had Les Ferdinand, so you had one big strike, and there was a lot of doubts from elsewhere as to can Ferdinand and Shearer come together. Were those doubts ever expressed internally at the club?
No, people had a thought of it. They wondered how they'd get on each other, you know. But no, there was no and opposition from anybody about getting Shearer. None whatsoever. It was wonderful, a wonderful time. It was just, there was elation throughout the club. It lifted us to that next level. When you bring a world-class player to your club, wow, they've got ambition. They want to go forward. And that rebounds itself from the fans. And it was, but, you know, they were just fighting to get in. Again, basically, we never had a ticket in the sense of seat free. The stadium was completely sold out all the time. And I said, it lifts the club in the eyes, not just but nationally, globally. And players abroad that you might want to bring in, they might not have thought of coming to Newcastle before. But, they might say, this club's got a mission, I want to be there. I want to be part of that team. That was like Ginola. generally came because we had Keegan had ambition, and we were good for him, for sure, and he was good for us, and a wonderful time when he was with us. He did well.
And when you had those, the negotiations were ongoing. I mean, was it hard to keep it all sort of secret and out from the press? Because obviously this is the England captain at the time, or certainly where he'd just been at Euro 96. He was a wonderful player. Man, I had interest as well. Was it all difficult to keep it under wraps?
I would imagine, if I can't remember now what the time is, because Freddie Douglas and Freddie Shepherd. And Douglas, my son, and Freddie Fletcher would do the dealing and put it all together very quickly. But it's these things, you know, I would imagine, we tried very hard to keep it secret, but eventually it got out. That's why I bet you, when he came, well, can remember that day? Yeah. The stadium, I couldn't believe it. We had more people there than some football teams have attendance on a Saturday.
And what was it like to see the sort of pride from the fans looking on that day, and then obviously in the years to come, but the fact that Newcastle, their club, had managed to sign a world record signing, and then it was their player coming home. What was it like for you to look out at the sort of pride that generated?
Well, that's a real. It's in a sense, it was. I'm a North Eastern, and the club, not Newcastle United, is basically the club for us, for Geordies, etc. It's north of the river, but it just showed everybody our ambition. We wanted to go places, and that rebounded on all the supporters and the people within the area. No, no, the factories and the jobs. The people, they used to tell us, basically, the owners of businesses who had tickets, etc. They used to tell us the staff couldn't wait to get in on a Monday morning just to talk about the football and the players. And that's what it does. And it happens here, I suppose. Man City today, the supporters have got that elation, that feeling, when they're buying all these top players in with all their wealth. So in a sense, it came on us in a smaller way.
And in terms of the success that Shearer had, I mean, you said you were signing a world-class player and he was obviously coming, but he was already in his sort of mid-20s by that stage. Could you have foreseen the success he would actually have in terms of his goals and that he would become the record goal scorer?
Well, you can it, but you just hope, in a sense, the players are going to show exactly what they can do. And Shearer did that. He was a fellow who was full of determination. Well, he went on the park to win, and he carried that winning mentality to the rest of the players. And when if anybody didn't play well, he would have a go at them and tell them, come on. But he was determined. He gave you 100%, 110%, 120% every time he got on the park and wore the black and white shirt.
And in that final point, in terms of that time, did given the fact that Newcastle just missed out on the title the previous season, was it the hope that Shearer was the sort of final piece of the jigsaw and that it just didn't quite happen in that sense? But was that the idea at the time, that this is the guy who's going to win us the title?
Oh, yeah. That's why we bought it, basically. We're not the next step. And it didn't happen, unfortunately, but that's where we brought him in. And hopefully, in a sense, to win something. And we didn't win it, of course, but always the bridesmaid, but never the bride. And it was a great disappointment to me. We tried hard enough, but in effect, the game changed when Abramovich came in. Basically, I suppose that basically put the damper on clubs of Newcastle sides and ownership. They were all millionaires, not billionaires. And Abramovich came in and changed the nature of the game, which is continuing today. It's now just a case of basically, have you got enough money to compete? You haven't got, the local people haven't got enough money to compete with all the oligarchs that are coming in. I've come in. The hedge funds, pension funds, a whole lot. It's a changed world. But at the time, it was our world and it was a great time. I look back with pride and smiles and a great thank you to everybody. It wasn't just me. It was a whole team of people that came in and tried to make it happen at Newcastle. And the brewery, I must add, Newcastle breweries at the time, well, actually, the support was tremendous. But, you know, Shearer, great, up there, and he's a nice fellow. He's a great fellow. He has a knowledge of the game, which basically you can transmit to other people and other players. And for that, I wish to thank him personally and wish him well. 25 days, should I say. I can't believe the years have gone so quickly. But wish him well and whatever comes for him in the future.
Oh, there you go. Emotional stuff. Fantastic to hear Sir John Hall talking like that about those times and giving us a little bit of insight into that deal as well, the Alan Shearer deal. Really interesting stuff about the brewery being involved and stuff like that and putting the sponsorship money up so they could afford him. It's At the time, you don't think about any of that stuff when you're a fan. You just think, oh, we've bought Alan Shearer. We must have 50 million quid in the bank. But God, the work they had to go through to get that deal over the line was incredible, wasn't it?
It was. And I mean, the brewery were heavily involved in quite a lot of Newcastle's entertainers era in terms of they were crucial in getting Kevin Keegan back in the first place. His contract as well was heavily incentivized by the brewery. And that's part of the reason why he used to go and do all the talks, both when he was a player and then when he came back as a manager. But £15 million, I mean, as I asked Sir John about, I mean, that is... Now you'd see a £15 million signing, it's just normal.
What's
then,
about £100 million, you would think now? Something like that?
Yeah, you're probably talking sort of Jack Grealish, borderline Harry Kane sort of money in terms of that, because it's... And Newcastle United went and did that. They just missed out on the Premier League title. And as Sir John said, that was the next piece of the jigsaw. That is what they wanted to move on. The ambition was, right, we've just missed out. Who is the next person? Who is the person who is actually going to deliver us the Premier League title? That was the thought process at Newcastle United in July 1996. I mean, it feels a lot longer than 25 years ago that was the case, just because of what we've been through over the last 14 years.
I mean, yeah, 20 years later, Alan Shearer ended up getting a statue, you know, for what he did for the club. And ultimately, I would say we got value for money on that deal, didn't we?
Oh, without a shadow of a doubt. I mean, as Sir John said, you couldn't predict that he was going to go and score 206 goals. You hoped that he was going to go and break all sorts of records. But the fact that he was going to be there for a decade and that he was going to score... I mean, the number of seasons where he scored 20-plus goals and he may not have actually...
And with seasons with big injuries as well. Seasons when he had big injuries when he was out for a long time.
Exactly.
And still the level of the amount of goals he scored is just terrifying.
Yeah, two seasons almost fully out with really serious injuries where he had to adapt the way that he played as well. That was so wonderful about Shearer. He's never the quickest player in the world, but he had to change the way he played because he couldn't anymore run him behind, and he didn't have the mobility he had previously, and he benefited from having what Sir Bobby did with him, was to bring in players who could do the running for him and the likes of Bellamy and Dyer who could go beyond him, and that allowed Shearer to play in a slightly different way. But his ability to be able to adapt and to score goals no matter how he was playing was just phenomenal. And it was an emotional time to bring home Alan Shearer. And that's what I found for when Sir John goes on about the fact that there was an idea, and as pie in the sky as it may seem in certainly in the modern day Premier League, but in pie in the sky as it was, that they wanted Geordie players or North East players to be playing for Newcastle United. And that's what all Newcastle fans want. Deep down, it means a little bit more if it's someone who's from the area. I mean, that was when the Longstaffs broke through. When you see Elliot Anderson come on last year, that there is that something extra that it means. And so for someone like Alan Shearer to have slipped through the net and to have gone away, and there's also been the likes of Michael Carrick and so many others over the years, to have that idea that you're going to try and keep those around, I think is something that all clubs should be trying to do. And it's just a shame that really things haven't kicked on in that way at all.
Yeah, I mean, we're going to get into the recruitment and the playing squad and stuff next week, but it's a stark contrast, isn't it, in terms of ambition of the club now compared to back then.
You don't think no signings is similar to the world record team?
Well, you know, Chris, the only team in the Premier League we are, you know, we're out there, we're leading the way. The only team in the Premier League who haven't signed anyone. Maybe this is the new tactic that teams needed to do all along. Maybe not signing anyone is the new signing someone.
Yeah, although, I mean, some of the signings that people have, I mean, Man City's only signing is Scott Carson, so I don't think that's the... I mean, they are actually trying to sign Jack Grealish and Harry Kane, so I suppose there is a massive difference there, but equally...
Scott Carson filling the old homegrown player quotient out there nicely. Lovely stuff. Fantastic. Well, there we go, Chris. It's been nice being back, hasn't it? It's almost been like a pre-season friendly for me and you, kind of getting our chops back up and trying to get ourselves back to full fitness. We've played a couple of the second string this week and we'll be bringing back the big guns soon. trying to get ourselves back match fit before the season starts.
Well, there was definitely echoes of Newcastle's pre-season friendly against York, which was a horror show in this. In this episode so far between me and you.
Well, speak for yourself. This hasn't been a horror show, I don't think. It's been all right, hasn't it?
Well, I meant mine and your performance more than anything else. I mean, there's been some great stuff in terms of the Callum Wilson interview and John Hull, but then there's just been me and you. So
we are very much the glue that joins all of this together, though, Chris. You know, without us, the whole thing would fall apart. Without us, all you would have would be Alan Shearer and Callum Wilson, and that's just not enough quality, is it? Oh, God. Well, thanks a lot, Chris, anyway. It's been great. Right, that's it for our first show. And as we mentioned earlier, we're going to be getting into the football next week. We'll have a look at the squad, transfers, or lack thereof, and what success looks like for Newcastle United in the 2021-22 season. And I'm sure that will be a whole heap of fun, Chris. Until then, take care of yourselves, and we'll speak to you soon. Cheers. Bye-bye.
Athletic.